Hello, and welcome to Don't Pee on Your Leg and Other Scientific Misconceptions, where every episode we discuss some scientific misconceptions, and we hope that you learn something you didn't already know about the world. I'm here with my co-host, Margaret. Let's get going. Hansley Burton.
And joining me is my co-host, Camden. This sauce tastes more like soup, Hansley Burton.
Welcome to the show. Our first segment every week is where we share something we're excited about. Margaret, what are you excited about?
I think you and I have the same thing we're excited about.
All right, let's say it on three. One, two, three. Seventh anniversary. Oh, hey.
Not of this podcast.
No.
But of our marriage.
Of our marriage. Happy 7 years.
Cameron was very sweet and thoughtful and made a little restaurant atmosphere out on our front porch because you got to stay home. So it still felt really special, even though we were quarantined like we are every day.
And because we were quarantined, we also celebrated in two worlds, both in real world, and we dressed up our characters on Animal Crossing and also took photos together.
Yep.
I really should put that on our social media.
Yep. No, it's fine. Every year we take, like, since our wedding, we've taken, including our wedding, we've taken us, like, the same picture in the same pose and, like, take it every year. And so we took one in real life, like, with our actual bodies. And then we took one on Animal Crossing too, because I feel like we both felt like that kind of encapsulates this anniversary.
Yep. We will always remember the 7th one spent in a global pandemic.
So happy anniversary, Camden.
Happy anniversary, Margaret. Well, I know already that you and I are both very excited
today.
They're chomping at the bit. Mm-hmm. So let's get into it. Mm-hmm. The misconceptions, our main segment of the show. Every week, we each bring a new scientific misconception to share, explain, and discuss. As a note, of course, each co-host researches their misconception on their own, brings it to the podcast, and the other one has not heard it, so that we can discuss and learn alongside the listener and not feel like we need to know anything more than you might already know about this misconception. So let's get into it.
We got to flip a coin. I think we've used this before, but I like it. This is a coaster from a band called the Timbers, Kansas City band. Check them out. But one side looks like a vinyl and then one side is blank. So do you want to call it in the air?
Yep.
You can say, just say heads or tails. The tails will be the blank side.
All right.
Okay, ready? Ready?
Vinyl.
It didn't really flip. Should I try again?
Yeah.
I'm going to like kind of toss it.
Yep.
Ready?
Vinyl.
Hey, you. Oh. I swear you.
Also,
weigh these things.
Knew I was going to say vinyl because I didn't know what heads and tails was the moment you said it.
Sure.
So.
All right, go ahead, Camden.
All right. Super excited. Let's get into it. Margaret.
Mm-hmm.
You and I eat a certain kind of diet.
Yeah.
What is it?
Vegetarian with a heavy flirtation with vegan.
Yeah, I feel like if there's been a timeline of our lives as vegetarians, your timeline started a lot earlier than mine. But I think we've been slowly sliding towards being closer and closer to 100% vegan.
Yep.
I would say about 60% of our diet is vegan.
I was going to say like 75.
It might be more. I don't know what.
Especially in quarantine when we make most of our own food, I'd say it's a higher percentage that's vegan now.
Good point. Why am I talking about that?
I know why. I bet I know why.
What do people always say to us, Margaret, when they're like, oh, you're vegetarian, but...
They say, but how do you get your protein?
How do we get our protein?
See, it's such a weird question because when you were a meat eater, did anybody ever ask you, Kimon, how's your protein today? You feeling like your protein's good? How are you getting your protein?
Are you too proteinated?
Yeah.
Well,
no one ever cares until you're vegetarian.
Let's get into it, because clearly already both of us have some feelings on it. And I promise, of course, as always, I'm going to bring the science with it.
Mm-hmm.
Do vegetarians and vegans, those on a plant-based diet, get less protein than omnivores? Let's get into it.
First,
I'm going to share with you the citations. There's a lot of them.
Yep.
I wanted everyone to know there's a lot because it's one that a lot of people have asked. It is a widely resourced and research-rich question.
Yep, I am looking at my desktop of my laptop, and I have a little sticky note that says all of my ideas for future misconceptions, and I will just go ahead and cross this one off.
Yep.
Because it is, it's a thing we think about a lot.
Yeah, so a big resource I got a lot of information from is the textbook Nutrition for a Changing World by Scientific American, the first edition by Jamie Pope, Stephen Deseski, and Allison McCook. National Academy of Medicine, Harvard, the USDA, the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, dietitians, essentially, dietetics, and Science Magazine.
Great.
Just because I can't pronounce it doesn't mean it's not a reliable source. let's start with the beginning of all of this. What is protein? Protein is a macronutrient, which there might be something in this already that's a misconception. A macronutrient is not something that is a big nutrient. It is a nutrient that we need a lot of. Macro meaning big.
Busting misconceptions all over the place. I don't know if I had a conception about it, but...
But I think I've had it for a while and never had it... Not like it really impeded my ability to understand what it is, but I might have misconstrued what that means. It is a macronutrient because we need a large amount of it.
Mm-hmm.
There are four big ones, biologically speaking, that are important for humans. You want to take a shot at any of those, boys?
The four macronutrients?
Mm-hmm.
Protein.
Protein's one.
Calcium.
It's a micronutrient, which is a great one. I'm glad you brought it up. A micronutrient, again, not means it's small, just that we need less of it. Still need it. It's definitely still a nutrient.
Oh, gosh. Iron.
Another micronutrient.
Fat.
Fat is one, or lipids, but fat.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you got two big ones. Another one is interesting because we don't need it in the way, we don't think about this when we eat our food, but we certainly need it. Our whole bodies
salt,
are...
water.
It's what makes us unique.
My astonishing personality.
Yeah, our personalities, which some people might think is encoded.
Oh.
By your...
Just tell me.
DNA.
Oh. What?
Nucleic acids.
Oh.
A lot of the food, like we have to replenish, because we're always making new cells. We have to replace the DNA, and not with new DNA, but we have to like copy it over and over and over and over again. Those are still built of building blocks.
DNA is a macronutrient?
Well, we're getting the nucleic acids
that
make up DNA. The NA is nucleic acids. Okay. There's also RNA and other things like that. But it's important to think about. We have to make new cells all the time. Those still need DNA in them. And the other one is something a lot of people say you have to watch in diets is carbs.
Okay.
Which is, big ones are sugars, which are very simple carbs, and starches, which are very big or complex carbs.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got fats, carbohydrates, nucleic acids, proteins. We're obviously going to spend a lot of time about proteins today.
I would assume so.
Made of 20 essential amino or 20 amino acids in proteins.
Mm-hmm.
9 of those are essential, which means that our body does not make them.
Ah.
We have evolved to gain those 9 essential amino acids through our food. There's a great, I've talked about before, the book Human Errors by
Nathan Lynch. Yeah, you and I have discussed this. Mm-hmm.
That a lot of animals still have the ability to make those proteins or amino acids.
Mm-hmm.
We have not, because it's actually... it requires less energy to just get it from your food than to make it yourself. Sort of cool.
Yeah.
And then why is protein so interesting? Our DNA codes for protein. That's like pretty much all it does.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we think about proteins, it's not just to be strong.
Yeah.
It's everything.
To be a functional person.
So most people, when they think of proteins, they think of muscles, strength.
Mm-hmm.
But also our hormones. A lot of our hormones are made from protein, insulin. Yeah. Whenever you see an IN at the end of something.
Protein.
Yep. Melanin is a protein.
Serotonin.
Serotonin is a protein.
Mm-hmm.
Our antibodies are proteins. our enzymes that help us do all the chemical reactions in our bodies are proteins. So proteins are super important. How much, let's get into this though. How much protein do humans actually need?
Not as much as we think.
Not as much as we think. The average body, I thought you were about to say it.
No, it's okay. I did a presentation about this for grad school a long time ago, but it's been a while.
It's a hard number to remember. It's 0.8 grams per kilogram of body weight or 0.36 grams of protein for every pound of body weight, which,
okay,
I'm going to break that down, comes out to about 7 grams per 20 pounds of body weight.
Okay.
So to do the math,
that feels
for
very
you,
doable.
If you are around 140 pounds, you need 50 grams of protein a day. 165 pounds, you need 60 grams. 200 pounds, 70 grams. I'm doing rough rounding to give you a whole number. So 140 pounds, if you weigh 140 pounds, 50 grams of protein. 165 pounds, 60 grams. 200 pounds, 70 grams.
Mm-hmm.
You can find your number around there.
Yeah. And also, if you're not sure, talk to your doctor. Talk to your doctor anyway.
Yeah, that's a great. Talk to your doctor on all of this. I am going to tell you clearly that you don't need as much protein. The big mixed conceptions are going to come out. You don't need as much protein as you think.
Mm-hmm. Unless you have some sort of medical
situation. We're always talking on like
broader
scale. 95% of humans here.
Mm-hmm.
Don't need as much protein as you think. And because of that, where you get your protein, obviously, we're going to bust some misconceptions here. Who needs more? When we think about who sits outside, a lot of times people are like, athletes. Power athletes, like people who need intense, like who have intense strength requirements or speed requirements, need an additional 0.4 grams per kilogram a day.
Okay.
So essentially, instead of needing 50 grams, if you're going to take another 0.4 and add that, you're going to have like 75 grams. So you're essentially, if you weigh 140 pounds, and you're like a super athlete, you're going to eat the same amount of protein as like a 200-pound person. Again, not really as much
as you think.
Protein, more protein as you think.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, too, they're just looking to like cut some of the other things that we don't want, like fat, that sometimes those athletes don't want to increase in their body.
Right.
And the other people, actually, who need the same amount of extra protein a day, people who are older than 65 years old.
Oh.
They tend to lose body mass faster.
Yeah.
And it has shown to reduce the risk of disability and increases the likelihood that you will live longer too.
Oh, okay.
So if you tend to be over 65 years old, if you find yourself often over the age of 65, consider a little bit more protein. Again, consult your doctor if there is something going on, which I'll get into at the end of like why you may not need more protein. That's why you need how much protein you need is not a lot. 60 grams for 165 pound person.
Yeah.
50 grams for 140 pound. Okay, grams. What things have grams? I mentioned like 7 grams per 20 pounds of weight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So let's break down that. For every 20 pounds you are, you need 7 grams of protein.
Okay.
So I looked into it, and I converted all of this for us, or found
I
nice resources.
I heard you doing math earlier.
I was talking to a certain robot in our house. How to break these all, because I wanted to standardize it for the listener. Hearing grams of protein is not really relatable often, because like I don't know.
You can't really visualize.
What is
most
a gram of a protein?
A gram.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So around 7 grams of protein is the equivalent of 1 all beef hot dog. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
A quarter cup of cheddar cheese.
Mm.
A quarter cup of 80% lean ground beef. A half cup of walnuts. 1.5 cups of brown rice.
I assume you're saying this all separately. The seven grams is not all of these things.
Half a cup of black beans and half a cup of lentils.
And that's 7 grams. And 7 grams is needed for what?
20 pounds of your weight.
Okay. So that's not that much.
No. 1 hot dog, quarter cup cheese, quarter cup ground beef, half cup walnut, 1.5 cup brown rice, half cup black bean, half cup lentils.
Yeah.
And here's the thing that they talk about a lot. It's all about the package of your protein.
Mm.
Now I sound like I'm an evangelist for like a diet commercial. I'm not.
No, you sound like you're like a like a self-help, like a Tony
it's
Robbins.
It's all about the package.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, think about the package. But it's true. You're when you eat a hot dog, you're not just getting protein. What? People say like, why you shouldn't eat a bunch of hot dogs?
Because who knows what's in them?
There's a lot of stuff in them. Particularly, there's you're also going to get all the fat in them as well.
And salt.
And there's salt. A lot of processed foods are a ton of salt. You like can't have too much salt. Preservatives, but salt tends to help things stay preserved. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So when you eat an all-beef hot dog...
I don't.
Not only are you getting about 7 grams of protein, but you are about getting 7 grams of saturated fat too.
Mm-hmm.
Not good.
No.
When you eat a quarter cup of cheddar cheese, you are getting about 7 grams of protein, but you're almost getting 6 grams of saturated fat.
Mm.
Quarter cup of 80% lean ground beef. Still lean means you're getting some percentage of saturated fat.
Mm-hmm.
It's only until walnuts, half a cup of walnuts, do you get the same amount of protein with almost no saturated fat.
Okay. So walnuts are like a better choice than a hot dog, say, at least in our amateur dietitian opinions.
Well, it's not amateur. Mm-hmm. I would never guess for people here
right.
on the show.
Right.
This is sourced directly through the USDA.
Sure.
So
good point.
Standardizing this for people, but I am certainly not guessing mm-hmm. at these numbers. 1.5 cups of brown rice. Again, 7 grams of protein. This mm-hmm. is all standard. No saturated fat. A lot more fiber.
I'm noticing a trend here.
1/2 cup of black beans. Ton of fiber. Ton of fiber. And by ton, I mean more fiber than there is protein.
Mm-hmm.
Still 7 grams of protein mm-hmm. and 1/2 cup. No fat at all.
I think I see a...
And 1/2 cup of lentils actually had even more, almost 8 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, absolutely no fat. That's how I ordered it.
Mm-hmm.
When I went down that list, not only were you getting the same amount of protein, the exact same amount as one beef hot dog,
mm-hmm.
but you were getting no fat and a ton more fiber, which is a lot healthier. But don't just take my word for it. Why is a plant-based diet healthier too? We know it lowers heart disease. Processed meat, like you mentioned, have yeah. the highest risk associated with them in heart disease. There is an astronomical number of links. No matter how many new articles that come out saying this, there's something here that is going to link, oh, maybe red meat's not as bad. There's just so many that link it to heart disease.
Mm-hmm.
A low-carb diet plus a high-protein diet where that protein came from vegetables
mm-hmm.
Showed also a lower risk of type 2 diabetes.
Okay.
I will say, of course, you want to be careful with protein in general. If you have kidney and liver diseases, your kidneys and livers and liver are very essential to processing protein.
Yes.
I can say this. I have folks in my family who need to really watch their protein levels, whether it's from animals or vegetables.
Yeah, no matter what it is.
So I'm not here to just say like, and take as much protein as you can. But like I said, the package of what you eat with the protein matters.
Mm-hmm.
And if the idea of lowering your chance of heart disease or diabetes doesn't interest you, might I suggest this concept of greenhouse gas emissions?
Yeah.
I standardize this again. I have an Excel sheet that I put together of standardizing the 7 grams of protein, and for every 7 grams of protein, how much greenhouse gases are produced
wow,
per pounds down. Of carbon dioxide.
Mm-hmm.
7 grams of beef, so that one hot dog produces 7.7 pounds of greenhouse gas emissions.
Wow.
One hot dog, which does not weigh even a pound,
mm-hmm.
7.7 pounds of greenhouse gas emissions.
And again, greenhouse gas emissions are the emissions that contribute to climate change and kind of help trap heat next to our planet, like a heat trapping blanket.
Yes.
Not good.
Not good. Greenhouse gas emissions. More of them, bad.
Less of them, great.
Great. Beef. So 7 grams of protein in a beef hot dog, 7.7 pounds of greenhouse gas emissions. Mm-hmm. Lamb, 3.1 pounds. Cheese, 1.7 pounds. Again, this is all per 7 grams of the protein they give you.
Yeah.
Milk, 1.5 pounds. Finally, we're getting under 1 pound of greenhouse gas emissions,
mm-hmm.
but still though only 7 grams of protein. Chicken, 0.9 pounds of greenhouse gas emissions. Probably the best for the planet that you can make a choice for an actual animal, but this list goes on.
Mm-hmm. I figured it did. You don't make an Excel spreadsheet with like four things.
Eggs, 0.6 pounds. Grains, 0.4 pounds. Soybean, tofu, 0.3 pounds.
Soybeans are the things that tofu is made of. They're also in other things.
Yes, soy is in a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Soybeans are in tons of things. Nuts, and this was all grouped together by the USDA, or in this article in Science Magazine, I had to take the Excel sheet and give me an extra percentage or decimal point. Nuts, for every 7 grams of protein they give you, only produce 0.04 pounds of greenhouse gas emissions.
Wow. I didn't know nuts were that, like, and they release so little.
And I think, and I'm not a nut farmer.
Sure.
And I think while we do know that there's a lot of water that is demanded by them, and of course it depends on where they're grown, when you consider all the water cows need to drink, all the water that cows need for the food that they eat, you have to remember that all of that gets added up and multiplied. So even the water that it directly takes to water a plant is still not the equivalent.
No.
I'm going to break this down for you in a non-math way.
Sure.
Or not in a different, but just a different way.
Yeah.
Between nuts and beef. Remember, a half cup of walnuts gets you the same amount as one beef hot dog of protein.
Mm-hmm.
You could eat one hot dog or 96 cups of walnuts, and that would have the same greenhouse gas emissions.
Wow.
96 cups.
Wow.
Which is 192 times more protein than one hot dog.
Yeah.
Which is, in case you're wondering, 10 days worth of protein for a 200-pound person.
Wow.
Or one super athlete.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
10 days of protein.
For the
same amount of greenhouse gas emissions as one hot dog.
I love that framing of it. That blows my mind. Really.
When I did that math, I was just, it's blowing away. If you don't care about the planet and you just care about money, I got another one for you. It costs 2/3 the same amount for 100 grams of walnuts. Is 2/3 less expensive to get the walnuts than it is beef. It is also just cheaper to make this food too.
Which is crazy because walnuts are kind of expensive.
They're not grown to the same level that we produce beef.
No.
But the case is there. It is cheaper per gram. It is 192 times more better for the environment to have a walnut. And I just chose, like, soy, grains. Even if you're a vegetarian and you still have milk or eggs, still far more better for the environment and a better source of proteins. I included one thing, which is most people say, didn't humans evolve to eat meat? This is also discussed in Human Errors by that book that I read by Nathan H. Lentz.
Great book.
I'll just add it with, yes, but guess what? We no longer live in a world where our protein sources are scarce to come by. We have the abilities to make those choices.
Yep.
Or to make those choices. Mm-hmm. It is not more expensive. Sure, walnuts might be an expensive choice to eat. I don't think you should eat 92 cups of walnuts.
Yeah, please don't. In fact, please do not do that.
That's not the point I'm raising.
Right.
But you can certainly replace it with the other options I've said here, with eggs, grains, soy, nuts, black beans, lentils, brown rice, walnuts, all ways that you could even be vegan, let alone vegetarian.
Right.
I'll leave you with a little point here of some people will say, but aren't there some things that we just need from animals? From all of these resources, I created a list of 6 things that are often cited as like you need how to somehow supplement that don't.
I know one of them.
What is it?
B12.
Vitamin B12 is the number one thing I see all across the board. It is important. It keeps your blood cells performing functionally. It helps you make DNA. I learned something brand new just couple minutes ago.
Whoa.
We have been taking B12 supplements.
Yeah.
Because
many vegetarians do.
If you just take a supplement, a multivitamin, you'll wipe out this list I'm about to tell you pretty much.
Okay.
But you can look and double check. Soy and rice milks enhance their product with B12. I checked.
Really?
A serving of our soy milk has 125% the daily recommended amount.
Great. Did it. Done.
So didn't even need that supplement. Not that.
I mean, but not from that perspective.
Vitamin B12, iron, riboflavin, omega-3 fatty acids, iodine, and vitamin D. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Those tend to be the ones that people are more concerned about.
Yeah.
Which, yes, you need those right amounts. Those all come from cereal, mm-hmm. is enhanced with a lot of this. Mm-hmm. A lot of breakfast foods, legumes, nuts, fruit. The vitamin C in fruit helps absorb iron, so you still need to eat fruit.
Yeah.
People who eat a bunch of meat but no fruit aren't going to actually get that iron either.
Oh.
You need vitamin C to help absorb it.
Okay.
The fatty acids, again, all of this, iodine. Eat iodine salt. You can have your fancy Himalayan pink crystal mountain salt.
Are you thinking about Bon Appetit?
Yeah, but guess what? Iodized salt, Morton's iodized salt, is also a great source of iodine.
Yeah.
That's why ionization was put out there in our salt. It's a great way to get it and not think about it. 192 times more protein can come from the same amount of walnuts than a hot dog. 96 cups of walnuts would get you the same greenhouse gas emissions of one hot dog.
Camden's fists are in the air right now. You can't see it.
I want to be leading a rally cry here.
Go ahead.
10 days of protein from that amount versus one hot dog. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like I'm being angry about hot dogs.
But it's the meat production in general that generates so much greenhouse gas.
Greenhouse gases.
And fresh water. And land.
And just, if you just want to me to come back to the very beginning and hit you with the very basic answer.
Yep.
Do vegetarians and vegans get less protein? No, they don't. Because you don't need as much protein as you think. And a lot of the foods that you think give you a ton of protein might give you a lot of protein, but they also give you a lot of things in that package that you are not wanting to. A lot of fats and salt and things that you actually don't need. Help yourself out. Eat some lentils. Eat some black beans. Have some brown rice. Have some nuts if you're at it. Heck, even have some eggs or cheese if you're starting slow and you don't want to go straight from an omnivorous lifestyle to veganism. Mm-hmm. You can dip into vegetarianism and start weaning yourself off like I have.
Maybe we should do a whole episode. Oh, now that we've gotten the main one out of the way, maybe we should do like a whole series of episodes about like vegetarian misconceptions. Like vegetarian food is boring.
Yeah.
There's a whole set.
I mean, I could have gone deep into this. Like there are so many I could have gone deep
into. But that's the biggest one.
The biggest one. Do you get enough protein?
Yes.
Yes, you do.
Yes. So stop asking.
Don't ask. Ask that person.
Do you get enough protein?
Do you get enough protein? Because I get plenty.
Nice job, Cameron. That one is so, again, it is such a big topic. And that's one of the reasons I hadn't done it yet is because there are so many, people are very concerned about it. Irrationally so, I find. But yeah, great job. Yeah, we get enough protein. We might have black beans for dinner. I don't know.
You know?
We'll see.
We can have those black beans and we get a lot more fiber.
Yes.
And no fat.
That's right. So, Cameron talked about something he's passionate about, which I'm passionate about that too, obviously.
You better raise your fist as high as I raised mine.
I might like stand up and like.
Oh. Scream.
Throw something through a window.
Okay. Let's bring it back down a bit.
Okay. So this one is interesting because the misconception is wrapped in like a couple layers. So it's a misconception. Yes, fairly simple misconception, but it hints at a bigger picture. So here are my sources for this, first of all. FDA, the Food and Drug Administration's website, Live Science, Iowa Now, which is the University of Iowa's news platform, healthandhumanservices.gov, The Doctor's Show on YouTube, Forbes, the New Yorker article called The Operator, What's Wrong with Dr. Oz, which is a great article in the Journal of the Missouri State Medical Association by Dr. Stephen Dell, Business Insider, DrOz.com.
I wonder if Dr. Oz makes a guest appearance.
Surprisingly, no.
Oh.
No, never shows up.
Go ahead.
So I've been really frustrated and angry, honestly, recently about people peddling false information, especially right now.
Seems like an important time to talk about that.
Yeah, in the middle of COVID-19. So I started thinking about people that do this false information dispersion on a regular basis. And there's a lot of culprits.
Yeah.
I try not to be one of those people. And who should come to mind first?
I'm going to guess Frank Lloyd Wright.
No, he is a talented architect.
Ah.
No.
Then Dr. Oz.
Dr. Oz.
Okay.
So what do you think of when I ask, when you think of Dr. Oz, what do you think about?
Honestly, I know... I try not to ever give him attention.
Great.
I know he has a TV show.
Yep.
And I don't actually know if he's a doctor or not. I just know he is called Dr. Oz.
Okay.
He might have a doctorate in something.
Okay.
I think of him a lot in the same way as I think of Dr. Phil, where they're just people that come on looking to his advice as a doctor and probably gives a lot of advice about things that he probably isn't a doctor of. I honestly avoid every time I see Dr. Oz because I know I'm not going to get something that I would call reliable because he is doing things for the media attention. He is not paid because he's a scientist, which is a great thing to always look into is someone a reliable source? How do they earn their living?
Don't take away my talking.
Oh, sorry. Point. That was just my reason why no, I know you nothing really. About him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I feel much the same. I was very skeptical about him, never sought out his show. Yeah, because I like you said, I wonder about people who make a bunch of money from TV and are they really
interested in the misconception.
Yeah. So I'll talk more about Dr. Oz later and like more of those questions that you had about him. But I decided to look up some of the claims that he's making that he's made in the past. He's made a lot of claims. He's got some claims. He's got a lot of claims that are false. And a little bit more complicated, which I'll cover later. But today I thought we'd talk about a claim he makes that's been a misconception of mine in the past. I've never acted on this misconception, but it's a misconception I've seen on Pinterest, on the internet.
I guess I'm on the edge of my seat.
And it's about brushing your teeth. So his claim is, and many other people claim, that you can whiten your teeth by brushing with berries, sometimes in combination with other things.
Wow, I've never heard this
really?
Before. Whoa.
Okay. Maybe you're not on Pinterest as much as I am.
I was going to say, I'm you're imagining not. This is my image of this is like me sticking my finger into our strawberry jam.
No.
And just going to town.
Not quite.
Okay.
Not quite. So here's the misconception as Dr. Oz puts it from DrOz.com. Quote, strawberries can be powerful teeth cleansers that contain both an astringent and vitamin C. The astringent in strawberries aids in the removal of surface stains, while vitamin C whitens teeth by cleaning away plaque. End quote. No citation.
I have some questions already.
Sure, go ahead.
Maybe you can just tell me.
Okay.
I might need the breakdown of astringent.
Sure.
And I didn't think vitamin C was involved in teeth whitening. That's interesting. I've never heard that claim. So
I think that can be said for a lot of things on his website. I've never heard that claim. Or as my favorite podcast, Ross and Carrie says, they say, huh, I didn't know that. And I still don't.
They always say that when it's something that's
not true. Yeah. So why isn't this true? So basically he's saying you got your strawberries, you mix them on his website, he recommends mixing strawberries with baking soda, and a lot of other places recommend this too.
Okay, you mix strawberries. I can get that idea for like teeth whitening
with baking soda. Yeah, I've also heard like raspberries.
Okay.
But Associate Professor So Ran Kwan from the University of Iowa, she conducted a study that compared whitening efficiencies of baking soda, the baking soda berry mixture to other whitening products like professional white strips,
okay.
like the kind that dentists use and other over-the-counter products. So she found that the mixture had no effect on the whiteness of teeth and just removed food debris. So like, which in my opinion, a toothbrush could do even if it doesn't have anything on it.
Removing debris is good.
It's good, but that's not whitening.
Yeah.
She brushed 20 recently pulled teeth. I don't know how. I'm assuming they were donated.
Turns out her sinus was really strong up to the point where she yanked 20 people's teeth out without their consent.
No. So she brushed those teeth for 5 minutes, three times a day for 10 days.
What? Can we back up 1 second? Mm-hmm. This woman.
Yes.
This doctor. Yeah. This professor. This very smart person. Mm-hmm. I'm just
imagining the situation.
I have no problem with her credentials. It's imagining this scenario.
I know.
For science.
I know.
She's holding a tooth.
I don't know if she has to hold it. I've thought a lot about this.
She's holding a tooth between her thumb and forefinger. Uh-huh. And she's brush.
I don't know if it was more automated than that. I don't know. I didn't
see
pictures.
That's how I'm imagining it.
Well, feel free.
And I hope you, dear listener, are as well.
Feel free. So she did that for 5 minutes, three times a day, 10 days in a row. And that's the procedure that people that promote this product recommend.
I will say that is more than I brush my teeth.
Yeah, I generally, I'm a two times a day brusher, which my dentist said is fine.
But not 5 minutes. Oof.
That's a long time. We have our 2 minute
timers.
Yeah. Anyway, she found that with all of that, no discernible whitening.
Wow.
So that's because, according to a lot of folks, what?
That's because it doesn't work.
No. It's because products that actually whiten your teeth contain hydrogen peroxide and carbamide peroxide, which baking soda and berries don't contain.
Okay.
Don't have that. Apples and lemons have also been suggested by people.
I bet
like
I know why.
Dr. Oz. But they don't work either because they don't have those ingredients either.
I bet people think they do because they're like a little acidic.
I think that's
like, ooh, they're going to.
Yeah, that's probably
away
really
the
true.
Dirt in my mouth.
Yeah. Yeah. It probably has something to do with it. Like, ooh, it's a little tart. That must mean it's doing something.
Yeah.
However, Dr. Kwan found that the strawberry baking soda paste didn't just do nothing. It actually harmed your teeth.
Uh-oh.
Because it reduced the surface hardness of your teeth by up to 10%.
Not good.
Not good. And it's because of the citric acid in the fruit, which erodes your teeth. So you're
some
like brushing
acid,
that acid over and over and over and over. It's breaking them down. So in her study, she found that strawberry baking soda mix was not effective. The other professional products were more effective, at least more so than the strawberry thing. How did this mist start? It might be an appealing whitener because it's cheap.
Yeah.
You can easily acquire strawberries and baking soda. And Dr. Kwan believes that because the general public isn't familiar with what malic acid is, which strawberries can contain in trace amounts, maybe they think that it's safer and better at whitening than citric acid is. Mm. You know, like they're not like, oh, malic acid. And I saw that on the doctor's show.
Use terms that hope other people don't
exactly
know.
Like blinding with science, like, oh, malic acid, that must be so special. But that's not a whitening ingredient or an effective whitening ingredient. So why do I bring up Dr. Oz? I've got a real problem with him, Kimnan. I won't beat around the bush.
So too do those citations.
Yeah. He is a real doctor, to answer your question.
Okay.
He went to Harvard for his undergrad. He got an MD and an MBA at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine and Wharton Business School. And according
Those are some prestigious colleges.
Yeah, yeah. According to Columbia University's Med Center, he's the director of integrative medicine there at Columbia University.
Okay.
So he's clearly a smart man.
Yeah.
So what's the problem? The problem is, as you may have sensed, that he peddles a lot of fake and pseudoscientific treatments and cures that have no scientific backing whatsoever. And he does it with abandon. And people are noticing, especially the scientific medical community. In 2014, 1,600 doctors signed their names to an open letter saying that Dr. Oz is a, quote, fake and a charlatan, end quote, whose advice puts patients at risk.
1,600 people within...
1,600 doctors.
I'm imagining 1,600... I'm just imagining 1,600 teachers signing a thing that says, you're bad at teaching.
You're bad.
I would be sad.
Yeah.
And have to...
Doesn't
look into
seem
the mirror.
To matter. Yeah. So he's viewed as a scientific authority on health and wellness. He often wears like scrubs on his show to be like, I just came out of the operating room. And a lot of people look to him for advice thanks to his show, thanks to his fame.
Yep.
This is a scary quote. According to the New Yorker, One viewer of his show that got to meet him told Dr. Oz, quote, "I haven't seen a doctor in 8 years. I'm scared. You're the only one I trust." End quote.
Whoa.
So, like, that sends a shiver up my spine in terms of, like, the amount of faith people put in him. But it makes sense that with our screwed up healthcare system, people who don't have insurance, they're like, I can watch this TV show. It's the same thing. I can learn how to make myself feel better by watching this TV show. Way cheaper. So I get it. It just highlights the sad state of affairs that our healthcare system's in. How bad is his charlatanry? In 2014, the British Medical Journal, researchers found that when looking at 40 randomly chosen episodes of Dr. Oz, his health recommendations were backed by scientific evidence just 46% of the time, less than half.
I feel like I just randomly say more right things than that in a day.
Yes. Yeah, it's less than half of his claims have scientific basis. That's wild. And he has a show.
Listener, she's not standing yet.
I'm
probably because the microphone's near her.
In the article, What's Wrong with Dr. Oz by Stephen Dell, he points out that Oz is a trained scientist who's clearly literate in scientific studies,
yeah,
knows when something is valid and when it's not. The issue is that his audience is, A, the issue is he doesn't seem to care about that when he's making money from this show. B, the audiences of his show are filled with people who may not be scientifically literate. They don't know how to judge a reputable source or not.
And you're trained as a person, you're trained to trust people who have those qualifications. Because you went through all that work to become a medical doctor,
yeah,
I trust my doctor when I go see them.
Yeah.
Because they went through a lot of training, mm-hmm, and I shouldn't have to, be questioning. Like, when I go to my mechanic, I
you
shouldn't
trust,
question
like,
their qualifications.
You know what you're doing.
Their mechanic.
Nope. You cannot trust him. You might remember that he had to go in front of the Congressional Subcommittee on Consumer Protection, Product Safety and Insurance in 2014. Do you
remember this vaguely. Couldn't tell you why.
Yeah. He was there because he was making claims about a miracle diet pill.
Okay.
And I love this quote from former Senator Claire McCaskill. She said, "I don't know why you need to say this stuff because you know it's not true. Why, when you have this amazing megaphone and this amazing ability to communicate, would you cheapen your show by saying things like that?" So she's addressing the fact that he does have this platform. People listen to him. He could be doing good.
And he knows he clearly must know a lot of the time when he is saying something that is not backed by science.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This is not someone, because there's a lot of people out there today
who don't know what what the scientific method is, who don't know what peer-reviewed papers are or the importance of them.
But people listen to them, unfortunately.
Right.
But this is not that case.
No.
He knows what he's saying.
So I know I'm going long, but this is important. Cameron's looking at the clock. So you might be thinking, if you're an unfeeling, unempathetic person, okay, so some people get swindled by this guy and buy some diet pills that don't work. Like, what's the big deal?
I like to think of myself as an empathetic person. And I did have a moment where I thought, well, what if he's just willingly choosing things that he knows aren't that harmful? I'm just saying
you don't have
to be a bad person to think that.
Oh, no. You don't. But, and you might be wondering, like, okay, he's just one guy. How much harm can he do?
Mm-hmm.
That's a fair question.
I have a feeling we're about to get that checked, though.
We are, because who is he an advisor for?
Uh-oh.
The president. He's on the Council on Sports, Fitness, and Nutrition.
And if you are listening to our podcast in present or in future days, this is the year 2020. Donald Trump is the president of the United States.
Sorry, a little cough.
Yep. Margaret is feeling under the weather.
Just
go ahead.
Just for a moment. I feel better now. So he is an advisor serving on the Council on Sports, Fitness, and Nutrition. And he has the president's ear. That's what that means. And what is the president hearing when he listens to Dr. Oz? Well, Dr. Oz really loves the idea of using chloroquine.
I did not know he was one of the proponents of this.
Uh-huh. Which you might have heard about this is a proposed remedy for COVID-19. Now, there are not a lot of studies on this treatment. The ones that do exist say that the results are mixed and it has the potential to harm people, specifically their hearts, which Dr. Oz is a trained cardiologist, and their eyes. So it is not peer-reviewed. Like, the studies that he cites were not peer-reviewed and their results were released on YouTube.
And the thing about that drug is that it is prescribed by doctors.
Yeah.
There are many drugs that if I take them can mm-hmm. get better from, but mm-hmm. only when prescribed by a doctor.
Yeah, when you have a thing that is for, yeah.
medicate myself.
No.
Yep.
So it's very alarming to me that there is someone who has the president's ear who is peddling a lot of this pseudoscience that could hurt.
And has already hurt
many, yeah. many, there are many people
who have overdosed already because of it.
So, yes, I do mean to slam Dr. Oz, and I will forever. But it's also important to think about, like you were saying, evaluating sources. Just because someone's an expert in one area doesn't mean they're an expert in every area. For example, I did watch a little of that The Doctor show on YouTube. It seemed very Dr. Oz-y to me as well. And Dr. Andrew Orden, who is a medical doctor, but he's a plastic surgeon, he said that it is true that strawberries and baking soda whiten your teeth. But he's a plastic surgeon. He's not a dentist.
Yeah.
Like, yes, he may have spent a little while studying teeth, but that's not what his job is. Mm-hmm. That's not what his experience is in. So it would be like if I asked my gynecologist to tell me what contact prescription I needed. That's not their job. That's not yep. their area.
And I would say this too, maybe to point out, is that for those who might be sitting, well, this is tricky because I'm currently listening to two podcasters who each have degrees in science,
mm-hmm.
but oh, I get are there. Themselves. Oh, great.
I get there.
Because that might be a thought yeah. that a listener has. Oh, go yeah. ahead.
I get there. So, yes, the harm comes, like, it doesn't, is it that harmful if someone brushes their teeth with baking soda and strawberries? No. It's not that harmful. But, of course, the danger lies when those misconceptions and those pseudosciences get blown up to a much larger scale or with larger issues like cancer, like HIV, mm-hmm. like COVID-19. And we've seen a lot of fake COVID-19 cures.
Mm-hmm.
And they take advantage of people. And to me, they are pure evil because they rob people of time and resources that could be used for actual treatments. These fake COVID-19 cure products come in all forms, including supplements, food, fake tests, medications, vaccines. And the FDA is working with stores, other sellers, to get rid of these misleading products and stop their promotion. Recently, in fact, the FDA and the Federal Trade Commission have taken action against several companies for selling fake COVID-19 products. And they include, great. Yeah, it's great. They include teas, essential oils, tinctures, and colloidal silver. I'll probably talk about colloidal silver later in a different episode. But here are some tips. So yes, like Kim said, maybe you're not a scientist and you don't know how to evaluate sources very well. So at least when we talk about cures, pseudoscience, these treatments for COVID-19, here are some tips that I really loved from the FDA to make us hopefully aware of potential misleading products, treatments, and other claims. So this is word for word from them. Be suspicious of products that claim to treat a wide range of diseases. Personal testimonials are no substitute for scientific evidence. Few diseases or conditions can be treated quickly, so be suspicious of any therapy claimed as a quick fix. If it seems too good to be true, Camden?
It often is.
Miracle cures, which claim scientific breakthroughs or contain secret ingredients, are likely a hoax. Know that you can't test yourself for the coronavirus disease. So I just like those tips because they are succinct. It's hard to know because the business of these hoaxes is to be under the radar
yeah.
and to seem legitimate.
Yeah.
So I am not at all blaming people who fall for them because yeah. people who are looking for hope for illness,
yeah.
you'll do anything. I get it. So it is the responsibility of the government, of TV networks, to monitor content to keep us safe.
Yeah.
So say that you find a fake COVID product. You can report it. From the FDA's website, the FDA is monitoring complaints of fake coronavirus treatments and tests. Consumers and healthcare professionals can help by reporting suspected fraud to the FDA's Health Fraud Program or the Office of Criminal Investigations. So to report unlawful sales of medical products on the internet, say something pops up on Instagram, you can go to tinyurl.com/fake-internet-cure. And to report suspected criminal activity not on the internet relating to FDA-regulated products, then go to tinyurl.com/FDA-criminal. And if you're confused about which one's which, just go to the FDA's website and they are pretty good about leading you to those two places. Hey, Cameron, I didn't throw a chair through the window.
The restraint you showed is truly a miracle cure of itself.
Thank you. I don't trust it.
But just kidding. That was amazing. Thanks for also giving us the resources of where to go if we see something on the internet or not on the internet relating to false medical cures, drugs, and COVID-related things.
To just be clear, those you don't have to just report about COVID. It can be any fake pseudoscience-y, like, scammy medical thing.
Thank you, Margaret.
Yeah, you're welcome. Cameron, tell me about something you've been consuming this week as part of our last segment.
Well, something I've been consuming this week to bring our collective blood pressure down is something that actually tends to raise people's blood pressure, but some people not. Some people like horror.
I guess.
I don't.
You like it more than me.
I don't like it, but I'm not as scared as you. Yeah. You're a little scaredy cat. Yep. Speaking of scaredy cats, the Scaredy Cats Horror Show by Gimlet Media is a new podcast that is only, I think, as of this recording, 3 episodes in.
Yeah.
Where they do exactly what you guess. They take a scaredy cat and they make him watch
classic horror movies, classic scary movies.
And then they talk about the movie, its history, what was scary about it, why is it so scary. Mm-hmm. They get other guests on the show who tend to be experts or people who just know a lot about
like horror movie, like fans. Horrors and,
Episode 1 was about The Exorcist.
With Jason Mantzoukas.
Episode 2 is about
Alien.
Mm-hmm. And they got one of the directors of the...
Producers, I think?
Yeah. She was involved in like all 6 of them in some way. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting. And I think the idea is that it just gets scarier and scarier each time.
I think they're trying to explore like different genres of that like too. Horror, thriller, suspense kind of thing.
But I like it because this person is... like they said, a scaredy cat.
Like me.
Like Margaret. And they give them rules. Like you can't watch it in the daytime. You have to watch it at night. You have it's to so watch unfair. It with the lights off. You can't have your cell phone next to you.
Ugh.
So he can't distract himself. He can't cover his eyes.
No.
He can't mute the television.
No.
So yeah, it's
so hard. I did. One of the things I like about it is that it kind of challenges me to think about like, okay, they're watching Alien next week. They just said, can I do this? Can I watch Alien? And I did. And it wasn't that scary. In fact, I would say it isn't scary.
Yeah, Alien is a weird one, especially coming right after The Exorcist, which is...
very scary.
Oh, no, they haven't done Alien. That's the new one.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But they announced that they
episode
would.
Episode 2 wasn't Alien. Episode 3
was
is Alien.
Oh,
episode
no, it was...
Episode 2 is Nightmare on
Elm Street. Yep. Too scary. Too spooky.
Margaret?
Yeah, I love that podcast.
What are you consuming?
I am consuming... a wonderful book and audiobook called Weird But Normal by my friend, my other soulmate
and
besides
friend of the
you.
Show.
And friend of the show and former guest on the show, Mia Mercado. It is a collection of essays and pieces about growing up in the Midwest, especially in Wisconsin and in her half American, half Filipino family. And she's just such a funny writer, but that almost doesn't give her enough credit. Like, it's also very poignant at times, very relatable. Just, I would highly recommend Weird But Normal. And there is an audiobook that she reads. So get out there. It was just released on May 17th. So you can be, in the mix right away.
Yeah. And what I love about her reading is that so often we're used to an audiobook read by someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And her delivery of her own words is just so funny good. And so good. Like it mm-hmm. to hear it. And I kind of like that. Like, and I know that it's not every author's strong suit to also be able to read and narrate.
Right.
But, yeah. The audiobook I think is especially just really cool to listen to.
Yeah.
Check it out. Weird, yeah. but normal.
Weird, but normal.
I said, check it out. Like you are the one who said you were consuming
yeah.
it, but
yeah.
it's also great.
I also it. Say, check it out.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening today, everybody. If you liked this episode or any of our other episodes, please rate us and leave a quick review. That really helps people find us. We are starting to see more new listeners, which is really exciting, but we're a little greedy. We want even more. So help new listeners decide if they would like us by leaving a review on the podcast app of your choice.
You can hear more content like this from our Sister Wife podcast, From U to O, hosted by my co-host, Margaret.
Don't Pee on Your Leg and Other Scientific Misconceptions is a podcast produced by Two Birds, One Scone. Articles, blog posts, and more about what you can do every day to conserve our environment can be found at twobirdsonescone.org.
Our original music is by Camillo. And if you have scientific misconceptions that you'd like explained or want to provide feedback to us, just email us at don'tpeeonyourleg@gmail.com.
Have a great week! Bye!
Bye!